keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit coldslitherpodcast.com, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the right of the page. Scroll down and you'll be able to shop at Amazon through us. There you can buy books, games, movies, music, and much more at Amazon, while at the same time helping us manage the cost of our network and keep our podcast free for you.
The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Clip Nation's Comic Chronicles.
Yeah, last minute. I was like, oh, crap, we need sound effects.
Because you know I forgot about it. And I forgot my thing at the bottom. Anyway, I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by the man that's usually not doing the sound effects, but tonight he is until Agent 70 shows up. That's at PCN underscore Dirk on Twitter. Make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And while you're going to websites, go to theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Just have to wait.
Yeah, I'll figure it out one of these days.
So yeah, follow the Twitter account at TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Add us to your circles on Google+. Just search for, actually, you can go to the URL, google.com/plusTheClickNation.
Oh.
And that's plus symbol. YouTube.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Search for TheClickNation. And let's see what else we're on. Yeah, subscribe on YouTube, like I said. We're on the Comic Related Podcasting Network and the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. That's comicrelated.com and coldslitherpodcast.com.
Do you still put reviews on that that one website, the Comic Roundup or whatever it was?
Whenever I post, I do need to start promoting that. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to remember that. But yes, the way it works is, I guess the guy that runs that site has some auto-uploader thing, so like whenever I post a review, he gets it somehow, or he gets like the first like paragraph of it, and then like, you know, read the rest on their site type thing, and they put my grade for the comic up. It's kind of nice.
All right.
But yes, comicroundup.com. Use the hashtag Comic Chronicles on your favorite social media websites. And remember, we record live every night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Every night?
Oh, no. Every Thursday night.
Like, if we're doing this every night, I need a raise.
Yeah. It would be nice 30-minute shows if that was the case. So, yes, every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And make sure to follow Dirt on Vine, where you can see his Vine comic book, and on YouTube, where he's got something else cooking.
Yeah. All right. We got stuff going on all over the place.
Yes. And as of tonight, you can follow me on Periscope, which is a new Twitter live streaming app. You should be able to search for me under my Twitter name, at TimDOGG98. So before the show tonight, I did a nice pre-Comic Book Chronicles episode 112 live stream where I very quickly kind of just went over plugging the show, really, and talked about some of the Marvel news that came out this morning. Which now leads us into the comic book news, or the news section of tonight's show.
We always start with all the cinematic news on the Periscope before the show starts?
I'll stick more to the comic news on Periscope. Actually, anything under the sun is up for discussion on Periscope. Why limit myself? I give the people what they want. That's more.
Then they better make themselves heard.
That's more Tim DOGG98. Alrighty, so AMC's Preacher pilot casts Arseface. I don't feel like clicking on the link to who it is. Official Owain Yaman joins CBS's Supergirl as DC Comics villain Barb Tots. The Russo brothers have reportedly closed their deal to direct Avengers Infinity War. I'm actually glad for this news. Just because with them signing that exclusive deal with Sony, it kind of looked like that they might be moving away from the Marvel movies. Hmm. And with the, I guess, rumor of Joss Whedon not doing Avengers 3, had me kind of worried, like, who's going to be doing this major two-part crossover?
So wait, who is it?
The Russo brothers.
Who's that?
They did Captain America: Winter Soldier.
Ah, okay.
And they're doing Civil War.
All right.
So it's in good hands.
Gotcha.
So more Marvel movie news. Rumor has it that Marvel's cast Captain Marvel, and that she could appear in Avengers: Age of Ultron. Hmm. They say who was cast, just that rumor she has been cast.
Hmm.
I actually appreciate that. Don't tell me who it is. I won't be surprised. Damn it. So, a new Fantastic Four poster was revealed. Greg Rucka and Michael Lark's Lazarus is in development at Legendary TV. So congrats to those gentlemen. Almost any Image book is up for a TV or movie deal these days. But I will say, I know I tweeted earlier in the week, I said I hope all these shows actually get, you know, produced and made.
Yeah.
But I don't read Lazarus, but I know the I guess synopsis of it sounds like something just ripe for, you know, TV or movie media.
Well, that was one of those books where I went on a road trip. I forget where I was going, but I read like the first 9 issues just all, you know, while sitting in the van mm-hmm. on the road, and it was enjoyable. But it's just one of those things where I'm just waiting for another time that I've got, you know, a couple hours to sit there, and I'll just grab another chunk of the books and read them all in one sitting instead of trying to keep up with it. There's a lot of books that trying to keep up with monthly just gets out of hand. But if I, you know, build them up and then I'm on a bus or, you know, waiting in an airport or whatever, then there's a chance to sit there and read through a whole bunch of them.
I respect you for being able to do that because I tried to, like, binge read. I can't even, like, binge watch shows. I think it's my poor attention span. Like, I have to be doing stuff all the time.
My wife and I discovered Parks and Recreation, like, what, a month ago? About 4 weeks ago. And we're now on the final season. We've got, like, 3 episodes left in season 7. We've just burned through them all over a couple weeks.
That's a show that I used to watch that I just stopped watching.
Hmm. It's good.
I like it. I'd love to catch up on it, but where's the time? Another Preacher news. Joseph Gilgun joins AMC's Preacher as Cassidy.
I don't know who that is.
Me either. Last name kind of sounds familiar. X-Men Apocalypse rumored to include cameos from Tatum, Jackman, and Barry.
Sounds like a law firm.
I was going to say, you should know all these people from just their last names only. If you don't recognize who they are, sorry about your damn look.
Hey, real quick. Are you going to be tweeting for Comic Book Chronicles tonight from the Tim DOGG or from the CB Cron Twitter account?
Probably both.
Okay. Because that's something, I noticed that you mentioned something about that, and we need to let people know which Twitter account they need to follow for the show. Because if you have an actual one for the show, then that's one that we should probably, you know, throw out there and make sure people follow.
You are correct, sir. So, yeah, the account's been there for a while. I've just kind of been sitting on that. I said I was going to wait till I finally had comicbookchronicles.com up and running, but go ahead and start using it now. So, I need to change my icon down here and my ads. But, yes, the Twitter account for Comic Book Chronicles is at CBCron.
Mm-hmm.
That's short for Chronicle. Does that sound fine to you? I was debating that name. I was like, should I make it Comic Book Cron?
You know, the shorter the better.
Yeah.
You can get a short one as long as it, you know, ties in with what it is you're doing. The shortest possible thing you can do, because people are lazy and they're terrible spellers. So
yeah, I need to shorten the hashtag.
Yeah, well, that's why we need to use, like, CBC or UCB Cron.
Maybe that's when we start doing CCron and need a hashtag. See, we talked this, instead of having all these discussions off the air, just discuss them on the show, especially when we're missing 2 of our members.
Yeah, well, we got to, you know, fill time.
Yeah. I'm liking the changes we just came up with. So, yeah, CBCron.
Speaking of our hashtags, what about CBC Draft?
Damn it. It's funny because I thought about it last week with the tournament starting. I was like, oh, I know Dirk's going to bring that up. It took you a week.
Well, I don't follow sports. I had to wait for something else to make reference to it.
Just know I have not forgotten about it.
Yeah. Well, you've forgotten about it.
I haven't forgotten that it exists. I just forget to go and actually see how much you beat us by. Because I'm pretty sure you won, because you had, what did you have? You had a Original Sin, was it? Damn, that was out then.
I don't even remember. Like, it's been so long.
Hold on, I actually got it here. Do I have who had what, though?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we can't use CBC because that's the Canadian Broadcasting Company.
Yeah, I was going to say CBC is more likely used by stuff. Yeah, you had Original Sin and Batman Eternal, so more than likely the hashtag will be shortened to CBCron to match the Twitter account because, like you said, shorter is better.
And no one's using that hashtag.
No one is?
No one is, so we're good.
Yeah. Let me do some. I'm going to see if I can change my icon down here to it as the show goes on, because the show must go on. I'm going to skip this Tyrese Gibson Green Lantern post, because I just hope it's not true. I just want to see him in Fast and Furious movies. Bryan Singer announces Jubilee as latest addition to X-Men Apocalypse. So, can't wait to see her appear in less than 5 minutes camera time, pop some fireworks, and never be seen again. Because that's what happens with these mutants in X movies. The more, the merrier, as long as they're not doing anything but just using up the special effects money. All right. So, to the comic book news. Mighty Cat had two things from last week that I guess we didn't get to. First, he has a must-read visual essay on ethnicity, color, and colorism in comics. And you can check that out on io9.com. And comics fans and pros share hashtag MyFirstComic. Seems like that hashtag was used a while ago, but stuff always comes back around. I know last week, or actually this week, was the four favorite heroes and villains hashtag I got included on a couple times.
Yeah, I saw that one.
I just did my favorite heroes.
I didn't realize that I was supposed to respond with, like, my list. I was, like, in the car or whatever when I saw the tag, and I was just like, oh, someone thinks I'm one of their four heroes. That's awesome. You know, I didn't really pay close attention to what it was.
Look at your ego there.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, come on. I just
can't get to my point. Mariah Carey scenes in the background. That's a music reference there.
Oh, okay.
All right. Archie Comics announces Archie Horror imprint. So I will say salute to Archie for doing some big changes. You know, relaunching Archie, there's the Archie line, and then there's the Horror imprint, and there's another one too, right? Another imprint?
The Dark Circle.
Yeah. I was going to say, how's that different from this Archie Horror? But
Dark Circle is just Dark Superheroes.
Oh, Dark Circle. Okay. I'm thinking about, what is it, Archie versus Predator and Archie? And, what does that fall under?
Who knows? I don't know. Because they sent us a Ashcan-type preview book for it, and you know, it's got decapitated bodies. It's got blood dripping down. It's full-on Predator. It's everything you expect from Predator. So it's more Predator than it is Archie. It just happens to be drawn in that style.
What? Which imprint does Sabrina the Teenage Witch fall under?
They've just been doing it as an Archie book. I'm assuming that's going to go under Archie Horror.
Oh, okay.
The Afterlife with Archie and Sabrina have just been yeah, they say mature readers on them, but otherwise they're just Archie Publishing. So I'm guessing part of the idea is that the Archie Horror books will all be branded with that 17-plus, you know, tag on it to help separate them from the regular line of books that are geared more towards tweens nowadays.
Shout out to Roddy Cat for letting the people know what the new hashtag is. Tweet that. All right. That's... So the new feminist Thor is selling way more comics books than the old Thor. A lot, actually. I was kind of surprised looking at the number of her stuff was selling. It's a good book, though, so people are speaking with their wallets.
Well, they also got CM Punk to write a story, so I'm sure that helps.
Yeah, it actually was a fun story. I guess I liked it a lot more for artist name escaping me. Chew. Oh, what's the Chew artist name?
Gilroy?
Yeah, Rob Guillory.
Guillory, however you pronounce it.
Yeah. So a couple of Secret Wars announcements that we'll begin to tonight. But the first one is Civil War was announced, finally, from the creative team of Charles Soule and Lin-Neil Yu. Mm. So I enjoy Charles Soule things, so I'll be reading that.
Oh, you like his thing, huh?
Yeah. That's... Whoa, what did that do? Hold on. Accidentally minimized my browser window. Okay. Only Press announces Blood Feud by Cullen Bunn, Drew Moss, and Nick Filardi. Rat Queens wins the GLAAD Awards. Marvel introduces A-Force Presents, an anthology collection featuring female heroes. So basically what this is going to be is an anthology book that has different stories from some of the various women series that are out right now, like Thor, Black Widow, Miss Marvel. So, and I think these are supposed to go in like the bookstores, like Barnes and Noble and whatnot. So.
Oh, right, right. I remember that. Yep.
So, smart move. And I have no idea how to say her last name. Aslan's Rosie Press aims to revive a genre with fresh romance. So I think her name is Gibney Aslan. I think she works for Comets Alliance. I may be wrong. I'm probably M. Actually, I'm going to check on Twitter because I don't want to get put false information out there. Her name is Janelle Aslan. Yes, she's a senior editor at ComicsAlliance.com. She did a Kickstarter for a romance, just a publisher, I guess publishing house for romance stories, and it got funded in 3 days. So congrats to her and her company there. Go to her, follow her on Twitter to get all the details on that, which is at GimpNelly. N-E-L-L-Y, like the rapper. Hail Hydra for Secret Wars from Rick Remender, Andrew Robinson, Roland Boski, and Chris Chicory. So for those who aren't aware, that is the same creative team for the Winter Soldier Bitter March miniseries. So this is going to be a domain of Battle World where Hydra basically won and took over the world, and you'll see some of your favorite heroes re-imaged as maybe villains or servants of Hydra. As my shower makes a noise.
You're not in the shower, are you?
No, but I think the little suction cup thingy I have in there must have moved. Valiant Comics announces 25th anniversary tour debuts Emerald City Comic Con exclusives, which I must add, ECCC is this weekend. All your favorite creators online are tweeting about it and saying how they're arriving in Seattle now. Sounds like it's going to be fun. I'm jealous. Jealous, I say. So last week, I believe we talked about the whole, at least I believe we talked about Valerie D'Orazio and Chris Sims rivalry. So the update on that is Chris Sims is taking an indefinite leave of absence from Comics Alliance. And Valerie D'Orazio is leaving Twitter at the end of the month.
Leaving Twitter?
Yep. Deleting her account because she's still getting violent threats over it. So hopefully both of them just can move on with their lives and this doesn't haunt both of them going forward.
It's also one of those things where it was such a big deal, I never heard a thing about it until now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Actually, William Bruce West, who's a friend of the show, he was, last week when it was going on, he, I guess, filled me in on all the history on it, so he knew a lot more about it than I did. Of course, I wasn't really big on, like, internet forums or anything many years ago. Actually, the forums are, like, the one thing I never got into is forums. I'd go on them and read them every so often, but I never, like, posted or spent time perusing them.
Yeah.
Captain Britain and the Mighty Defenders coming to Secret Wars. From Al Ewan. So, I guess now getting some of the announcements from this morning, at least I believe, or at least some of the more recent news. Marvel started revealing the lineup for the new Avengers team, all new, all different. So I'm assuming when Roddy Cat put this on here, I wonder if this is actually the new team, or actually, I guess this is from today. I guess I don't know if this was from earlier in the week when they were doing the teases or whatnot. Let me scroll down, see if he actually gets the whole. Nah, okay, this is the. I guess this will be the point where we can actually talk about the whole all new, all different Avengers lineup. So for those who don't know, Free Comic Book Day on May 2nd is Marvel will release their free comic book issue, which will be a half and half book. One part of the story, one half of the book is going to feature the all new, all different Avengers, which is a post Secret Wars lineup for the team. And the other half of the book is the Uncanny Inhumans number 0, I guess they're saying. Even though I think Uncanny Inhumans 0 comes out like in a couple of weeks. But either way, there's an Uncanny Inhuman story. And throughout the week, they've been doing silhouette unveilings of members on the covers. So today we got the full lineup for the Avengers and Inhumans. So the Avengers lineup will read as the female Thor, all new Captain America, which is Falcon, someone in Iron Man armor, back in the gold and red, Vision, Nova, Sam Alexander, Miss Marvel, and Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales. So that got the internet's internetting. I guess my first reaction to it was that's kind of a young lineup with Miles, who's a teenager, Sam Alexander, a teenager, and Miss Marvel, a teenager, working along with the new Thor and Vision and Cap and whoever the Iron Man is. And the creative team was, my guess of Rick Remender helming Avengers was wrong. And instead it's Mark Wade with penciler or artist Mahmoud Azrar and Laura Martin on colors. I'm actually kind of excited for that creative team.
But that's for the Uncanny Inhumans?
Oh, yeah. For Uncanny Inhumans is, if you've been reading Inhuman, then the entire cover, except for one person, will be familiar to you. It had Medusa, Inferno, I think her name is Naja, Trident, and Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. So the question is, my question at least was, does Johnny Storm get his fire powers back through Terra Genesis, proving that he's an Inhuman? Or does he just get him back before Fantastic Four ends, or maybe during Secret War somehow?
Has he lost his powers?
Yeah, he lost his powers sort of near the beginning of James Robinson's run, so he's been powerless since then. So maybe it's one of those things that he gets them back either before the end of Fantastic Four or during Secret War somehow, or maybe afterwards. And maybe this like Uncanny Inhumans team is like the Uncanny Avengers, where you have like just like people pulled from different parts of the Marvel Universe, Avengers and X-Men for Uncanny Avengers, Uncanny Inhumans, Inhumans, and whoever else they want to include in there. Kind of just have to wait and see. But May 2nd, make sure to go to your local comic book shop and pick up the issue. They unveiled some of the vehicles for the Ghost Racers Secret War series. Not sure. DC and Alloy announced Quarantine Zone by Daniel H. Wilson. Not sure what that is. Let me click and see. DC Entertainment and Alloy Entertainment have announced a new graphic novel coming to store shelves in January 2016. Okay. So a DC graphic novel. And Daniel H. Wilson is one of the writers on Earth 2 Worlds End. Yeah. And he'll be the Earth 2 Society writer also, I believe, come June.
Well, Quarantine Zone looks kind of post-apocalyptic, so I might actually read it.
There you go. You're not reading Earth 2 Worlds End, are you?
No, I've just been kind of skimming it here and there, but not really reading it in detail.
I'm not familiar with his writing, so... But I will be reading his Earth 2 Society book.
Yeah, well, it is crossing over Future's End this week, crosses over with World's End next week. So I've been kind of keeping an eye on the last couple issues just to kind of see what's been going on leading up to whatever this crossover event is.
I've been debating doing that. It's like part of me doesn't want to dip my toe into it and get sucked in, because I pretty much said I was going to try to ignore Convergence for those 2 months, except for like a book here and there, like the Shazam book I'll read and maybe a few others, but I don't want to get sucked into it.
Well, I kind of feel the same way about both Convergence and Secret Wars, where I'll read the main series for both of them, and there might be one or two books here and there, but for the most part, I'm just not excited for either one, really. I'm more excited for them to end, and I want to see, you know, kind of where it leads to in the future. But I don't know, a lot of these books on both from both companies where they're just going back to random time periods, and especially the Secret Wars Battle World stuff, where it's just random characters from this alternate timeline versus those random characters from that alternate timeline. That just, I don't know, something about it's just not really clicking with me. So I just kind of want them both to be over.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel with the Convergence thing. Like, I don't, not being a DC reader of the past, you know, the appeal of seeing whatever Superman with the trunks on versus Elseworld Superman or whoever doesn't hold anything for me, any appeal to me, I should say. But Secret Wars, I'm more, even that, I'm taking more of a, I'm going to pick from the series I want to read. That, and it seems like they're announcing so many of them that I actually can do now. But there's still a lot of them I'm going to end up reading.
There's a lot of the Convergence books where they're going back to time periods where, you know, I did read them regularly, and they are characters that I liked, but I don't really care enough for, like, a one issue, you know, that's going to do one issue special or two issue special. If they were going to go back and say, hey, we're doing 12 months, you know, then I'd be more excited. But the fact that you're just getting, like, this kind of one-off throwaway thing, just, you know, it's like, oh, well, that's great. It doesn't really mean anything, and it's not going to last.
Right.
So.
Okay. Spider Island and MC2 Spider-Girl return in Secret Wars. They're sharing the same book. Two stories in one. Legendary Comics announces Pacific Rim comic and two more comic series. Oni announces Elk's Run 10th Anniversary Edition, Alabaster Shadows, and Oyster War. Let me turn my TV for a second. Mike Deodato, President Obama talks comics, Ask Your Origin. And then Usual Team Hunts for the Red Skull and Secret Wars Battle World. Normally I wouldn't read that, but I see Josh Williamson is doing it, so I enjoy his image work. And it's only a 3-issue limited series, so why not? Warren Ellis teases a new Marvel project. That was on Newsarama today. And I guess Comic Book Resources is the link that Redicat got it from. And extra, read all about it. Marvel announces a New York Bulletin newspaper for Secret Wars. So this newspaper format book will come out, and it'll have, like, news headlines from all the different domains in Battleworld. The Thor police arresting this person or that person, and what, I guess, carnage happened in this domain, and so that's kind of interesting. Yeah. Not sure how popular or productive it'll be, but I wonder if comic book stores will get copies, I guess, if you pay for them.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I remember seeing the press release for it, but I haven't seen the order information for it. Final order cutoff is April 6th, so, yeah, nothing says, well, here, actually, I tell you what, there's a code here, a diamond code. Let me go to the retailer site here, put in this code. Oh, that's okay, I'm logged in already. it's $5 for a bundle of 25.
Oh, that's not bad.
Top retailers will receive 2 free bundles. I see. Okay, so top retailers get 50 free copies to hand out to people, and then we can buy additional bundles for $5. So it will be a giveaway.
Got it.
I'm looking to see if there's a page count, but I don't see a page count listed on this one. So I wonder if it's going to be one of those, like, little, you know, like you take a piece of paper and fold it in half, like that size type things.
Right.
It might be just one of those that's, you know, 10 pages big or something. But there you go. All right.
All right. And variant cover news. Let's see if there's anything worth mentioning. Dave McKean delivers the demon to DC's Convergence number 3 variant. Collect them all. You won't believe how many variant comics ship in April 2015. in parentheses, the most BuzzFeed of headlines. This is, that's from Roddy Cat, who make sure to follow on Twitter, at Roddy Cat. Marvel launches New York City variants in May.
Yeah, Marvel is really pushing hard the fact that they're staying in New York City.
Oh, is that what that's for?
Yeah, that's part of the, you know, DC is leaving New York and going to Burbank, so Marvel is really, all those variants are just about New York City and the fact that they're staying in New York City, which, for me, I don't live in New York City, so I don't really care, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, my sister lives in Brooklyn, so I don't know, she might be interested if one of them has, like, her neighborhood on the cover or something like that, but, you know, otherwise, I don't know a whole lot of people outside of New York that are really going to get that hot and bothered by it.
Hey, I got my banner updated at the bottom.
Oh, there you go, with your new graphic.
Yeah, I wonder if I need to change that blue to a white, or maybe a yellow. Yeah, let me do some more editing here. But that's it for the variant news, which means it's time for me to do a ad read for cultslitterpodcast.com. As soon as I find what I want to do.
I will, you do have it up and ready to go?
I have the Google Doc open, but then I have to choose which ad I actually feel like reading tonight. Thank you. All right, so for you, the listeners of Comic Book Chronicles podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You we got The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl by Issa Rae, Yes Please by Amy Poehler, some pro wrestling books are Wrestling for My Life, The Legend, The Reality, and The Faith of a WWE Superstar by Shawn Michaels.
Ooh.
The King of New Orleans, How the Junkyard Dog Became Professional Wrestling's First Black Superhero by Greg Klein. And you have Books Made into Movies, Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn, Unbroken by Lauren Hillenbrand, and American Sniper by Chris Kyle. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/coldslitterpodcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslitterpodcast for your free audiobook. Actually, that I have that wrong. Let me get to say it one more time.
What?
The URL is different. There's actually URLs for all our shows. So it's, to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles. Again, that's audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles.
Are you sure?
Yes. And the Cold Slither podcast one is audibletrial.com/coldslither. All righty. Let's see if I can get this updated here. What color yellow am I? Go here. Don't mind me. There we go. Save. Save, damn it. Save. Well, I'm trying to get my color updated here. What book would you like to...
Maybe now is not the best time to be working on your logo. Maybe in the middle of the show, maybe you should set it aside and come back to it at some other point in time. Okay, well, since I'm going to start, I'm going to pick an oddball one that I can start out with that I know nobody else on the show has ever read. Star Spangled War Stories number 8, featuring G.I. Zombie. This is the final issue because it is ending with Convergence. And he has been fighting this biological weapon that turns people into basically a zombie-like state, and he actually is the living dead. He cannot die. He can be decapitated, he can be blown up, he can be fed to sharks, whatever. Somehow he grows back and comes back and just keeps on coming. And so as he's been fighting this group, he's slowly been working his way up to the higher levels of this conspiracy and this secret society, and he's finding out that a couple of the guys who are at the top are former members of his military crew. And a couple of years ago when they were in battle, he got blown up and lost an arm, and apparently they took it and created a biological weapon out of it. And so he feels like he's responsible for what's been happening with this weapon and the outbreaks from when they've been testing it, and he's got to stop them. It does have a very original art style to it, where I think it's Scott Hampton is the artist, where he draws everything in pencil, and he shades everything in pencil, and then they go back over it, and they ink the outlines, and then they almost like a watercolor type paint to do the coloring on it. So it's a very unique looking book. There's nothing else like it on the stands. And just the fact that it's Star Spangled War Stories featuring G.I. Zombie, I mean, that's just an awesome title anyway. I'm sad to see it go because it's wrapping up with Convergence coming. It's one of the ones to hit the chopping block. It's been a lot of fun. And now that it's 8 issues and it's over, now's your time. You can sit down, do that binge reading, and get through the entire series. And it's worth it because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of action, and there's a lot of humor in it, you know, because you are dealing with a character named G.I. Zombie. I mean, how are you going to take that seriously? So it's bloody, it's gory, it's funny, it's action-packed, and it's just a good time thrill ride. So thumbs up on that one. Check it out.
Nice. I will get into... I guess I'll start with New Avengers number 32. The theme from some of the books from me tonight will be bromances, because there's at least a couple of them. So in this one, we have the bromance between Odinson and Hyperion as they're out on the... I forget the phrase, Universal Avengers, the ones off in space.
Yeah, they're the ones checking out the multiverse.
Yes, the Multiversal Avengers. And they're stranded, and they need to use, Nightmask needs to do one last, like, time jump.
Yep.
Time jump for them. And
dimension jump or whatever.
Yeah, dimension jump. And we learned that every time he makes a jump for them, I guess he ages backwards.
Kind of like Merlin.
So, correct.
In the old King Arthur. Yeah, and that was kind of sad to see him go. You know, for him to use up his well, uh-oh, I guess I better, which one is that? Yeah. I'm sad to see him go. I guess I better do that first. Because I like the character. I like this version of him. So, although I guess, you know, with Secret Wars and everything that's happening with it, who knows how long he'll actually be gone. He may reappear out of nowhere on Battle World to, you know, fight somebody, but who knows.
Right.
I also enjoyed what happened with Thor.
Because yes, I guess you can ring the bell again.
Thor is now worthy again. He had this hammer with THORR, Thor hammer, that he had found for those who were unworthy could pick it up. And in the middle of this battle, as he fights to save the universe, suddenly he can no longer pick up the unworthy hammer, which means he's worthy again. So I guess he's being restored now for Secret Wars.
Which him and Hyperion had a good laugh over. It was fun seeing how they weren't afraid to die.
Yeah. Yeah, I did enjoy that. The dialogue between them and the friendship was fun.
Yeah. I found Mike Deodato's art I don't know if it was his art or the colors on it. It was kind of hard to follow some of the action.
But, I don't know if that was like the way it was inked, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I don't know if I want to just blame him for it, or just the way that it was inked or colored. I'm not sure if he does his own inks or
actually,
not.
Actually, he is listed as the only artist, so he is the penciler and inker on
it. Yeah, just it seemed kind of off.
It seemed really like dirty. I guess scratchy and scraggly.
Kind of odd to see space depicted that way, because that's where the majority of the issue takes place, up in space. But what else do I have written down for this? Yeah, more Hickman mumbo jumbo, because, I mean, we know the basis of what took place in this issue, but as far as, like, what it means for the near conclusion to this story that we're coming to, which actually brings up another point. I was talking to a friend of mine online today about this. He actually brought it up. It's like, you know, with Secret Wars coming, Marvel can basically do what they want to with people and not have to worry about it.
Right.
It can all be reset. Like, you know, killing Thor and Hyperion here, spoiler, ding ding. And some stuff like, you know, killing Wolverine, changing Thor and Captain America and Iron Man and Hulk. It doesn't really matter because Secret Wars has come in, so those changes may or may not stick once it's all over.
It very well could be that in Secret Wars, one of the alternate universe versions of them that's, you know, from 1982 will be the one that survives and comes back for the new Marvel Universe, and so then they don't have to worry about explaining anything, really. They can just grab this other version of them, and there you go.
which I keep thinking is what's going to happen with Old Man Logan.
You think Old Man Logan's going to stick around?
Yeah, I think so.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah, we shall see, but because I think that's, you know, why else? Because Bendis keeps saying, like, major things are going to happen in that book that will have repercussions for the Marvel Universe after Secret Wars, so I've been wrong before, so don't hold me to it. Let me knock out my Black Vortex comics real quick.
Okay.
So there were three issues of the Black Vortex that came out this week. Guardians of the Galaxy 25, Nova 28, and whatever issue of Legendary Star-Lord came out. That shall tell you in a second. Legendary Star-Lord was issue 10. And like I said, in that order, I didn't get to the Legendary Star-Lord issue, but first up, Guardians of the Galaxy 25. First, it was, you know, no celebration for issue 25. That used to be a big deal in comics. But I guess when your book is going to be ending because of a mega event, it's not that big a deal.
Well, it was $4.99 instead of $3.99. You didn't feel like you got an extra dollar's worth?
Actually, I did, because I actually enjoyed this issue.
Hmm.
Yes.
Did you like it a dollar more than normal?
No. Maybe 50 cents more, I can understand. But so kind of spoiler alert, something big happens to a planet in this issue. And they're still playing hot potato with the Black Vortex. But we get a lot of, I guess what's the word, retrospective from adult Hank McCoy, who succumbed to the Black Vortex. He's finally realizing how he broke time and space. And pre-Black Vortex, he always thought that he would be able to, you know, fix everything. But now that he has all this omnipotent power, he realizes that, no, you know, you really fucked up. So he's kind of like, woe is me about things. And then you have a team of Avengers and, not Avengers, a team of X-Men and Guardians of the Galaxy get into a conflict with the Supreme Intelligence of the Kree and the Kree. And Nova ends up with the Black Vortex, which takes us to Nova issue 28, where it's him trying to get the Black Vortex back to Star-Lord and the rest of the good guys. And, of course, he has to take it back home with them to Earth, which introduces the Collector to this event, because, you know, he has to collect the Black Vortex. But at the end of the issue, he takes it to a safe place, what he believes is a safe place, but in actuality, he took it to the bad guys, and now Thanos' son, has succumbed to the Black Vortex. And that's where it ends, to be picked up in Star-Lord number 10.
Which you haven't read.
Which I haven't read, because I had read Uncanny X-Men instead.
Why were there three Black Vortex books in 1 week? Did they miss a week? Because I haven't been paying attention. So
I've been paying attention, but I'm not entirely sure what... Like, all new X-Men came out back-to-back weeks, I believe. And then, like, Guardians Team Up was the previous issue before this week's Guardians of the Galaxy. The problem is there's too many parts to this story, is what the problem is. Like, each month there's, like, six books that tie into it, it feels like. Because we still got Nova, we still have Cyclops and Captain Marvel's issues to cross over either next week or in April before the thing even ends. When I looked at the checklist for this event before it even started, I said, this is too many books. It's too long.
Yeah, let's see. Next week I see Cyclops is coming out, and it's part of Black Vortex. I see Guardians Team Up is not Black Vortex.
Yeah, that's how confusing it is.
Rocket Raccoon is not Black Vortex.
It is not.
It's just weird how it's doing that, where certain books are tying in, but only for, like, one issue. But the event is still going on, so the characters are somehow still related, but then their series are just continuing on like nothing's still happening.
I'm glad you just reminded me of something. So last week on CBR, I guess each week on CBR, they have a exposition where they invite a person from X book to answer questions from the comic book resources community, which I make sure to try to send an email in if it's a X book that I actually read. So last week was Cyclops, and the guest was John Layman. So what we learned is whatever next week's issue of Cyclops that ties into Black Vortex is the series finale of Cyclops. So yeah, you get to end your series on a tie-in event. So that's number one. Number two is there's a story beat that's been set up throughout Cyclops where, you know, how is Corsair alive? You know, how is Corsair alive? We find out, like, he's taking some kind of, like, drug that's keeping him alive, and he was running low on his supply of it. So I asked John Layman about that, and he was like, yeah, I didn't get a chance to you know, come up with a nice ending for that. So it's just, we just won't touch on it.
Kind of forgotten.
Yeah. Hmm. Which I don't really blame him for. I just blame the Marvel scheduling, and, like, that was a big thing for the series. And just like, oh, got to tie into this, and then you're ending, so, eh, don't worry about it. Kind of sucks.
Yeah. And we are now being joined by Agent 70.
Can't hear you, though.
Oh, we can hear the sound effects, but we couldn't hear you. We can't hear you talking.
The utter defeat on his face.
Nope.
Hear the sound effects?
Yeah, you hear the sad trombone.
Stat trombone.
Maybe you should only speak in sound effects.
I am Groot. So, Agent 70, you joined us just in time for the comic book review portion. The portion of the show I'm sure you were excited to talk about.
Of course you cannot, but...
You can say, yeah, the thumbs up or thumbs down or the trombone.
Did you read the Black Vortex books, by the way? Okay, so not happy about Black Vortex.
How do we fix this every week, by the way? Is it you leave and come back?
Just twiddle with some knobs and...
Can you hear me now?
Uh-huh, yes.
And I have sound effects. Huzzah!
Got everything working.
Huzzah! I uninstalled the beta Chrome that I was running on my MacBook, and I went to the most stable version, so I think that's what it was.
Oh, because you were running the beta?
Yeah, I think it was because I was running the beta.
Well, don't run the beta. That's a bad idea.
Well, you know, it was working fine up until, what, last week? And Roddycat was having the same problem, so maybe he's running the beta as well.
All right, well, do you have anything to add about the Black Vortex books?
Well, I did read Guardians of the Galaxy 25, and my one note is, who cares about this Black Vortex business? I did notice that, you know, they tried to make a big splash by, spoiler alert, oh, I love having my sound effects back, that they tried to make a big splash in the series by doing away with, or at least temporarily doing away with, the world of Hala, the Kree homeworld. So, you know, they tried to make, you know, make it seem like this Black Vortex crossover was meaningful and was going to have lasting impact and ramifications on the Marvel Cosmic U, and I'm still left, you know, just kind of feeling empty. You know, honestly, it's just sort of weird to see this, you know, kind of big crossover, universe-spanning crossover running parallel to the other books in the Marvel U kind of winding down.
Right.
You know, like heading towards Secret Wars, and it's funny. I don't know if anyone here read Guardians 3000 number 6.
Nope.
Not yet.
I won't spoil anything, but that's actually, I don't know if I say that, but no, I mean, the bottom line is this particular issue, unlike Guardians of the Galaxy proper, deals with kind of winding down the story where the story that we've been reading so far and heading kind of hurtling towards Secret Wars and the final incursion and the final kind of implosion of the Marvel U as we know it. And it's kind of funny. There's a character in this book that I won't spoil who basically, you know, in so many words explains exactly what's happening to Gina, I forget her last name, but the human point of view, you know, the reader's point of view character. You know, this character explains what's happening to her, and, you know, we might as well be breaking the fourth wall with this. You know, but I, you know, listen, it was a secret that Guardians 3000 number 6 was a candidate for click of the week for me because I had a good time reading it, but at the same time it was disappointing in that you definitely have, you know, more than a feel, you can see and sense that they're winding the story down in preparation for Secret Wars.
And there's a new artist on it now, right?
Guardians 3000. I don't know if this was the artist who was on the last issue. His last name is Leon.
Yeah, I forget who it was last week.
It's not JP Leon.
No. That was my first.
I'm going to run out and buy it.
No. When I first saw the cover of the issue, I thought the same thing, Dirt. And then when I opened it, I was like, wow. Jean-Paul Leon has changed his art style drastically. You know, all of a sudden his lines are clean. It is pulling it up now. Oh, of course, the credits are on the freaking back page. I go to the front and it's on the back, right? That's just funny.
Every time.
You know, but letting it load. There's some, you know, there's some funny bits in here. Abnett does a great job of, you know, making you smile as you're watching the story kind of wind down and having the pieces come together. Nico Leon, that's the name of the artist. Gerardo Sandoval was doing the art up till now. This is reminiscent of Sandoval's art, but is far less stylized. And I think it's probably a little bit more pleasing to the reader's eye who is not as manga inclined or manga influenced.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's definitely a cleaner line. It's definitely far more superheroic than manga-esque. So, you know, you may find yourself liking this art more than you have the art that's been in the book so far.
Oh, yeah, because you can see, if you go to the title page,
mm-hmm.
you can see the artwork from the previous books in comparison. And, yeah, I definitely like the style of this book more than the previous ones.
The lines are cleaner. It's far less stylized.
Yeah, exaggerated.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a nice look to it.
Give it a read.
I have a feeling I've seen that artist before. I'm sure if I dug around.
Well, it's reminiscent. There's a couple of influences that you can see, but the guy definitely has a clean line, and that's to his benefit. All right. What else did you guys read? Let me see what's on your list.
I didn't fill it out.
Ah.
Dirt just did GI Zombie, right?
Star Spangled War Stories featuring GI Zombie.
Okay.
Come on, get it right.
And I did New Avengers and 2/3 of the Black Vortex books.
Oh, what was the third one?
Star-Lord.
Oh, I didn't read Star-Lord. You did Guardians and you did Nova, right?
Right.
Gotcha.
No one likes Humphreys.
I'm not interested in reading the Star-Lord book. What can you do?
I just didn't get to it.
The New Avengers book, I thought was... the one thing I liked about this book, the funniest and best scene, was Hickman basically... restoring the status quo and then destroying Thor, basically. Spoiler alert, right?
Right.
You know, I thought that was the best scene. When I read that, I laughed out loud. You know, same as Thor. It was pretty funny.
I called it one of the many bromance books of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You want to do one of the other ones, Uncanny X-Men 32?
Yeah.
So, this issue is told mostly in flashback. And it revolves around Cyclops recounting the tale of what's been happening in his life to Havoc, basically explaining what's been happening with the last will and testament of Charles Xavier and the ramifications of that, and where Cyclops finds himself after finding out that Charles Xavier basically treated. I mean, we all knew this, but basically felt like Cyclops was his son and his direct heir to the Xavier School's legacy. So, you know, Cyclops is struggling with that, and he's trying to come to terms with that and finding, a new place for himself. And my one note in this is that Havoc doesn't feel, or at least he's not written in this book, like he's still inverted.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thrown off by that.
Like, I don't know if he's just hiding it well, or... they just said, forget that story, because...
Yeah, or like the brotherly love was overcoming the inversion or something, right?
Well, what book has Havoc been in, mostly?
Uncanny Avengers.
Okay, well then there might be something in there.
But he's not in that book anymore since it relaunched.
Correct.
Because they moved him over here.
Okay, well then never mind.
Well, I mean, you know, like post-Axis and post-Uncanny Avengers, that first volume, I was under the impression that Havoc was a big jerk at this point, but he wasn't acting very big jerky in this one, so I was a little thrown off by that. What did you think, Tim?
I enjoyed it. someone online that was kind of hyping it up, so I moved it to the front of my reading list, which took the place of the Star-Lord issue I was going to read.
Gotcha.
So it's, my question was, is Cyclops' mutant revolution dead? And what exactly is Cyclops planning now, since he's kind of closed his school down, and he was going to turn himself into the authorities for killing Charles Xavier and for all his attacks on the country.
Right. But
it sounds like now he had a change of heart and he's going to do something else instead, which we have to find out next week or next month, I guess.
Is it possible that the inversion just kind of wears off after a while?
It's possible, because they haven't really said. I know Tom Brevoort said on whatever his Form Springs or Tumblr account, like, you know, Sabretooth's not going to stay inverted good guy forever, and Tony Stark's not going to stay inverted asshole forever. So maybe it does just wear off.
We'll see.
I guess, to be fair, when he inverted, it made him agree with Cyclops, right? So he could technically still be inverted. He's just with someone he agrees with, technically, at this point. So you don't see him arguing about anything. Honestly, I read the last issue of Uncanny X-Men as a fluke, and so I like the fact that Scott Summers is, you know, basically seeing that everything he thought was the right thing to do kind of fall apart in front of his face. And now that the character is going through this, I went ahead and read this issue just to see what the follow-up was, because I was interested. And I think much the way Agent 70 likes seeing Superior Spider-Man get his comeuppance, I'm enjoying Scott Summers getting his comeuppance here and seeing how much of a mistake he's made and how many problems are his own fault, and seeing how this is going to resolve itself.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the countdown to Uncanny X-Men number 600, I guess, will continue on, which will be Brian Bendis' swan song from the X-Men universe, or side of the universe.
Right. Alrighty.
What you got?
It looks like we've read a lot of the same things this week. How about Inhuman number 13?
I enjoyed it.
This is one of my clear candidates for Click of the Week. I had a great time reading that.
Inhumans has made my list a time or two.
It's kind of weird, like, you know, that that Charles Soule has done such a great job of, you know, really making us care about these characters who are still so new to the Marvel U and so new to, you know, to the readership in general.
Yeah. Of course, I didn't want to like anything Inhumans related since it was taken away from the X-Men side of my Marvel Universe. But he's done a good job of introducing all these new characters and setting up these story arcs, and this one involves a lot of, it's a little quieter issue, but this last
I was about to say there's treachery afoot in this issue.
Scheming by lineage, and we have the return of an Inhuman.
Right, that was a big surprise.
And double crosses.
Absolutely. That was a big surprise. The return, won't spoil it, even though we have spoiled that somebody comes back. There was kind of an interesting scene at the beginning of this book that involved some of the new humans, as they're called in the book, and Gorgon, and and singing a rock song that I'm not familiar with. I didn't have time to Google it to listen to what it actually sounds like, but it's by the band Sepultura. And, there's a couple of great scenes in here, and one of the things that comes out of this is the fact that, some of these new humans still have quite a bit of training to do when it comes to controlling their powers and dealing with them in public areas and amongst other people.
Let's hear about Darth Vader number 3.
Oh, sir, you read this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This character on the cover here, this is Dr. Aphra, and she is, for all intent and purposes, the evil Han Solo. She's like the flip side of Han Solo. But she's only evil in the sense that she designs weapons and evil droids, but otherwise she's, you know, she's a...
But she recovers them, that's what I thought too, right?
A fun character.
Well, scavenger.
Yeah, she scavenges and rebuilds them, and basically she builds them to order a lot of time, and builds, you know, robot armies for people or robot assassins for people. And so Darth Vader, I really wondered when they said that Darth Vader was getting an ongoing series, like, how can you really do an ongoing story with him? Mm-hmm. Especially because we know where he ends up. You know, how do you add any sort of intrigue to a character whose origin and whose death is already written? And what they've done is they've put him in this position where in between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, he's on the he's in the doghouse, basically, for the Emperor. He was responsible for guarding the Death Star, and it got blown up. And so now the Emperor is not only disappointed in him, the Emperor's not sure if he can trust Darth Vader. So Vader decides he's going to use this time to go off on his own and try to figure out what the deal is with this little blonde-haired boy who seemed to have Force powers down on the planet. And to this end, he decides that he needs to get some information and some droids from this character, this Dr. Aphra. And the character is just, she's flippant about the fact that she's creating these monsters, you know, these assassins. Like, it's her job. Like, that's what she does. Like, she doesn't really care, you know, what they're being used for and who's being murdered by it, but she takes her job, you know, she enjoys her job, she does it well, and Darth Vader coming in and, in a sense, hiring her, even though, you know, he just takes control and people do whatever he wants, they've made this kind of weird dynamic where she is talkative and throws out the one-liners and, you know, does whatever, and he's the straight man who just kind of follows behind her, making that, you know, the stern look of his mask, you know. Mm-hmm. And it really plays off each other well, the way that they interact. And there's even a point where she's, at the beginning of the book, she's breaking into this this weapons archive where there's this AI chip, and she's trying to steal the AI chip so she can rebuild this droid and bring his memories back online, and someone's trying to stop her, and she even grabs the AI chip, and with a line straight out of Indiana Jones, with that wink, wink, nudge, nudge to Harrison Ford, she goes, "This belongs in an armory." This belongs in a museum. And it's just really, you know, it's one of those things where I'm sure you have to be a certain level nerd in order to get that joke. Mm-hmm. And to really enjoy it. But the fact that it's there just shows how much thought is going into this, as opposed to some of the other comics they've done over the years where Darth Vader is just this quiet, cold assassin that, you know, everyone else is running around doing stuff, and he just shows up and force pushes people into walls and slashes someone with the saber, and that's it. They're actually throwing some personality and some fun.
What I would add to that, though, is we're also drawing – this story also draws on episodes 1, 2, and 3. And I think because, you know, as much as we're not fans of the first three, you know, the prequel movies, you know, it did lend – you know, they did lend more weight and more depth to the character of Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker, you know, for good or ill, right? And those movies are drawn upon, what, you know, the events in those movies are drawn upon in this story. And I think that, you know, that allows us to see Darth Vader as more than just that caricature of that you were just describing. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy who's just going around force choking people.
Well, and they also, there's a sequence in here where she goes, "How did you even find me?" And you just see Darth Vader kind of staring off into space, and there's a shot of him smashing someone like through a mirror at a bar, and right, throwing someone in an alley, and then throwing someone else off the side of a building, and, you know, and then she just kind of goes, "I don't think I really want to know, do I?" You know, yep. And throws out some line kind of like that, where he does have a built-in personality, and you don't have to go into a whole lot of detail, mm-hmm, you know, to understand what's going on in his mind and what his history is. So there's a kind of a shorthand that they're jumping to with the character, which I think also, if you're familiar with the character, you're familiar with the movies, you know, you've grown up with this, and it's, for a lot of people, it's something that's been a part of their life, then you really enjoy the fact that it's kind of speaking to you on that level of who the character is.
Sure. Sure.
So this was a candidate for Click of the Week. This
nice.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you got to give super duper props to Salvador LaRocca.
Oh yeah, the artwork is beautiful, and everything looks exactly how you would expect it to look.
Exactly. I give LaRocca a ton of credit in keeping a consistent look to this book, and obviously, you know, his rendition of Vader is just, you know, it's spot on. You know, there's just some really great, well-drawn scenes in this. One of my favorite parts of this book was actually, and this is also a candidate for Click of the Week for myself, but But back to what I was saying, what I enjoyed from this was the astromech droids that they introduced, or at least the bizarro versions of the astromech droids that we've come to know and love. One is a protocol droid who is not quite the complete opposite of C-3PO, but, you know, it's pretty funny.
He's like the same personality, but the opposite demeanor, I guess you could say.
Yeah, demeanor or even alignment, if you want to go D&D, right?
Right, yeah, sure. Chaotic evil.
Exactly, exactly. And the little astromech droid basically breaks out like War Machine. If you look at the mounted weapons, yeah,
little guns that pop out of all the little panels.
Yeah, yeah, and the missile launcher too. I was just like, oh my god, it's a War Machine. LaRocca is going totally Marvel on us, you know. So I enjoyed, you know, like the little touches in this book, as well as the things that you were mentioning earlier about just like the nice, the well written interactions between Dr. Aphra and Vader. So it's definitely a well done book. I'm definitely enjoying the Star Wars relaunch at Marvel right now.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Alrighty.
You want to do some DC books?
Yeah. Who read Batman and Robin number 40?
We all did, I believe.
Everyone worth their salt read it.
Ah! I didn't put it on my list, but I did read it.
It was really good. It was nice to wait for Click of the Week.
Someone may have it as their Click of the Week.
No kidding.
Yeah. And this, I mean, to be fair, this is a book designed... You can do this as a spoiler if you want to ring the bell.
Yeah, absolutely. Get the mouse over.
This is a book designed to restore the status quo before Convergence. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Having said that, though, even though it's, you could almost say it's kind of predictable and maybe even a little, if you want to say depressing, you know, the way it eventually, what eventually happens to
right,
the
how it's resolved, right.
But the dialogue and the characterization and the way it plays out is very satisfying, especially keeping in mind the whole father and son dynamic of Bruce and Damian. Just made it so enjoyable to see how they kind of played with the superpowered aspect of it and how it worked itself through the issue.
It's funny because I guess I should have realized that the genie would go back in the bottle, so to speak, with Convergence coming up, but it just never dawned on me as I was reading these issues since the Robin Rises ended. I was kind of just interested in seeing, you know, Damian with powers, and it was fun. And it kind of ended just kind of like matter-of-factly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they did it in a way that the issue, like I said, the issue has had a lot of heart to it.
Yeah.
And, like, the page layouts by Gleason were pretty nice, and the final page was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I also love the dynamic with Shazam and Damian, because even though Shazam's an adult, they're technically both the same age.
Right.
So they did seem to have a lot of fun together.
Right, and that made sense, and I thought that I think that's ripe for further development down the line. Although, yeah, you know,
that's something that can be touched upon.
Exactly. Given the developments of this issue, you know, the dynamic might be a little different the next time around. Did anyone read Batman Eternal number 51?
No.
I read an article talking about what, I guess, the villain revealed.
Exactly. So my only note in this is, and I'm going to mildly spoil this. So it was Clue... hold on, wait a minute. And that's all I'll say.
They teased like three different main villains in this, right?
Seriously. I mean, that's been the point of this story is to, you know, really throw everyone off and hold you for 50 freaking issues to see who it is that's behind this entire plot. So I believe there's one issue left, and we will see once and for all what's been going on in Batman Eternal and what's been causing this story that actually leads up to where we are right now in Batman. So, I see you also read Gotham Academy. How about you, Dirt?
Yeah.
Nice.
I always read Gotham Academy.
Nice. I'm glad that everyone's on board with this because it's such a great, you know, fun read. I had a good time reading this book. It was a nice little wrap up to the story, but it also develops a kind of nice supporting cast and a new status quo for Olive. and leads her in a different direction.
I was going to say, we finally figured out what the secret was.
Right.
So we will not spoil that here.
Exactly.
But I do want to just point out real quick, there's an in-joke on the cover here where last issue, Killer Croc threw in his one-liner about throwing a big rock at Batman. And so here on the cover, we have Olive holding the chunk of brick in her hand, the big rock.
I didn't even notice that.
With a splitting headache there.
I did not even notice that. That's funny.
But I do have to say that I never thought Killer Croc was going to be a character that I would think about for more than 2 seconds. And this is the book that makes you go, you know what? I kind of want to see that character again.
I'll give you this. And I think part of it is based on the artist's rendition in this book, you know, that Kershaw puts on Killer Croc, because it's so reminiscent of the animated series.
Yeah.
Croc in the animated series was a good character. He was a doofus, but he was still a fun, you know, bad guy to watch for the most part.
Sentimental character.
Right. As opposed to the way he's been portrayed in DC Comics, you know, before the animated series and mostly since. So, you know, I think that's a positive for Clunan's characterization, you know, for Croc, and it makes us kind of appreciate the character a lot more and what we had in Croc when Dini and company and Tim were doing the animated series. It's kind of nice to see Croc portrayed like that in the books.
I also love the epilogue to this issue. The final three pages that set up some interesting interactions to come, I'm guessing, after Convergence, because there's no regular books for 2 months, so we're going to have to wait until, June, I guess, or whatever, to see exactly how this is going to play out. But what they set up for is to follow up on Batman and Robin is something I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yes.
And I also noticed that the epilogue here is in continuity with what happened in Batman and Robin this week, when they showed Damian and how he uses his powers, so to speak, in order to accomplish his goal here. Because he does not fly, he does not shoot lasers out of his eyes, he doesn't do any of that. So they at least are on the same page as far as that goes. So someone on the editorial staff was sure to pass notes back and forth to make sure that all worked out this week.
Kind of makes the story more evergreen, because, you know, ultimately, no one's going to recognize Damian as having, you know, the powers that we saw him receive, at least for the short term, in Batman and Robin. So, you know, anyone picking up Gotham Academy, which they should, by the way, will recognize what's going on and recognize the character. So,
and this is still one of those books where there are times where I flip to the page and I just can't, like, I have to sit there and stare at it for a minute before I start actually reading the character, because I just can't believe how good it looks.
Agreed.
And even, like, the guest artists on it do the same thing.
Right.
Agreed. They're definitely, they're trying to maintain a great, steady look, and it's, you know, I definitely appreciate it. I'm glad you guys are enjoying this.
Yes. And I hope, I guess, what is teased for the coming up in June and Convergence, at least it kind of sticks around for a while, it being the person.
Yeah, we won't spoil anything. We won't spoil it. All right, let's see. What else we got here?
I'm guessing I'm probably the only one who read Future's End.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that real quick. We are getting resolution here on the storylines. We are seeing how things are finally ending up. This crosses over. This begins a crossover with World's End. And one of the things that sets off the Futures End storyline being set 5 years in the future is that at some point the people from Earth 2 came to Earth 1 and brought with them all of Darkseid's minions, who were chasing after them because they were destroying, Darkseid was destroying Earth 2, and when these people made the jump to Earth 1, all the minions followed through, and that started this giant war, and everyone on Earth 1 had this distrust for the people of Earth 2. So this issue actually is when the event is taking place, and it explains how everything was set up for the people from Earth 2 to come to Earth 1, which is, you know, it's one of these, like, time loops type things where they realize that in order to stop what's going to happen, because Terry McGinnis didn't jump far enough back in time, they realize what the origin of of everything, like what the event was that set everything into motion. And once they figured out what that event was, we go back to what happened last week when they got the time jump watch, and they figured they could power it enough to do one last jump. So they figured out what the jump should be, where they should go, and what the event is that they have to stop. And by doing so, it's causing a ripple across through the Earth 2 books. So now you're going to see something happen in the Earth 2 books next week, which is a ripple from what is happening in Futures End and this week, and the two ripples together are setting off towards convergence. So you're getting that tight editorial universe coming together where all these things are starting to kind of snowball across from book to book to book, setting up for this giant crossover that they have in mind. And it really is... It is a satisfying feeling. As someone who has read this entire series, we're now 47 weekly issues into this series, it really is satisfying to get that feeling like here we are, everything's falling into place, things are making sense, you know, all this stuff that has happened that you didn't know why it was happening, and you know, time stream jumps and alternate universes and all this stuff, it's now finally falling into place and things are explained and you can see how it works together and how it's going to play out. And it's just satisfying that they didn't drop a ton of plot points. There have been a couple that they've dropped along the way, but not a ton of them. And now we're at that point where you're getting the resolution of all these different events. And, you know, it just feels good that things are finally working out in this book, because I was really skeptical that any of this was going to work out and come together in the end. Especially when you have like four writers working on it. You never can be sure if it's really going to, you know, come together in a cohesive storyline. And it did. So I'm very happy with how it's all come together.
So we see Batman Beyond on the cover. Do we see who is in, we find out who's in that suit?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, we do. I just flipped through it.
Let me add it to my list then.
Yeah. And we get yet another cliffhanger into the next issue for one last unresolved question here of what's leading into convergence and post-convergence.
Okay.
So I enjoyed it and looking forward again to the final resolution coming up here.
Maybe I'll do a binge of like the last three or five issues of it to see how it ends.
Yeah. All right.
Quick reviews.
Well, actually,
I got one last review that I can hit. Not quite in depth, but you know, I read Gem in the Holograms number one. You know, shout out to my sister who was telling me to read this and tell her how it is. If anyone's familiar with the '80s cartoon, they reimagined it for 2015, and the character names are the same. The origin is obviously slightly altered. It was actually a pretty enjoyable read. It read briskly. Didn't get too weighed down by any sort of continuity that it might be trying to establish or maybe draw upon. You know, there's a lot of cool little elements that were updated with modern or even slightly more futuristic technology. You know, to make it play, you know, as if this could actually be happening right now. You know, the art is actually, you know, I thought it was going to be a little bit harder on the eyes, but it's not as bad as I thought it might be, based off of the character designs that we've seen published, and preview art that we saw published. It was actually not as harsh as I thought it might be. You know, I actually didn't, you know, I was pleasantly surprised by it, and I'm more than willing to pick up the second issue for her and see, you know, and see what she thinks.
For her.
Oh yeah, of course. You know.
My only, I guess, gripe you could say about it was I was hoping that this was a book that my 7-year-old daughter could read, and it really isn't. It's not.
It's a little bit more mature than that.
Considering that it was based off an old Saturday morning cartoon, I was hoping it would be along those same lines and it would be something that she could enjoy. But it's really meant for a tween or a teen audience.
Preteen, teen, yeah. That's definitely the target audience.
Not quite for little kids.
Right. I agree with that. Alrighty, so if you want to get into rapid reviews, it's fire
actually,
away.
Here, wait, before we
get
to
another one?
Deathlock this week. You know, this is another Edmondson book.
Yes.
Which means it's automatically on the top of my pile. They're the first ones I read. And basically what's been happening with Deathlok is he woke up, I guess you could say. He now knows who he is. He knows that he is an assassin. He knows that there's this secret shadow group that has been using him on these missions. And the thing is, their remote control of him has broken. So they can no longer force him to do anything. And they can no longer wipe his memory. And so his handler, the agent within this secret, you know, society, secret corporation, whatever, who is controlling him, basically is telling him, do what you're told and don't let anyone know that you know what's going on. Otherwise, they will come after your family. They'll come after your daughter. You know, they will destroy your life. Just follow along with everything and we'll figure out a way to get you through this. And so she, it appears, is having second thoughts, you know, about what they're doing with controlling these people's lives, and she actually wants to help him out in this situation, but he understands he's got to go along with it, you know, in order to save his daughter. And he can tell that she has been tampered with. They've modified her memories. There's also a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who was investigating Deathlok and Domino and their interactions and, you know, the stuff that was going on there. And she wakes up, and she's missing a couple days' worth of memories and doesn't know what happened. And so Maria Hill is now deeply involved and understands that this is a lot worse than anything that they imagined. And so it's snowballing. The story is getting bigger and bigger, and much like what we saw in Punisher, the way he's building it up and building it up and building it up, he's doing the same thing here, where there's continually these layers of intrigue and layers of who do you really trust and layers of what's... You know, in this case with Deathlok, what's real and what isn't? What really happened and what's an implanted memory? What's a false memory? What's a memory that's been wiped from his mind, you know, type of thing? And so I really enjoy now that he has woken up from it. He's in that position where now he's got to try to figure out how to fight back. And you are in this situation where his handler within this shadow corporation, she seems to be on his side. And so far, everything she's done appears like she really does feel bad for him and she really wants to help him out. But at the same time, could you really trust someone like that? You know, you have to because of the situation that that you're in. And it appears like she's lying to her supervisors and everything in order to keep him safe. But is she really, you know, and that intrigue, that type of stuff, I really enjoy. This is a lot more Jason Bourne than anything else. I mean, this really does play a lot off of those same riffs. And what we saw in, like, even with Skyfall, with James Bond, and the way they played off of some of those things. So this is playing into a lot of that type of stuff, where is it corporations you have to worry about? Is it the government you have to worry about? Is it just the military industrial complex, you know, whatever that may actually mean, you know, all of that stuff flying together here? It really makes for this enjoyable book. And he is that character. He's a nice guy. You like him. You can identify with him. You know, he's that everyman who's just thrust into this horrible situation that is so out of his control and so beyond anything that he can really handle, and you really want to see how he works this out. And it looked like, you know, 2 issues ago that he was dead, that he had been killed off, but it was the brain trauma from that near-death experience that broke their control over him, that opened him up to this new reality. And I'm so enthralled with this character. I'm so enthralled with this book, and I just can't wait to see where it goes to next, just like Edmondson has done with Punisher, just like he's done with Black Widow. It is just so enjoyable. It's so rewarding. This is another candidate for Click of the Week.
Wow, you had a great week of reading.
It was. It was a really good week.
That's pretty cool.
Need to try to get Edmondson on the show.
Definitely, definitely. We're big fans. We are big fans. Are we in rapid fire now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I will hit on Ghost Rider number 12, which is the final issue of this particular volume of Ghost Rider, all new Ghost Rider number 12. It kind of abruptly wraps up the storyline. You know, we know due to possibly lagging sales and obviously with the onset of Secret Wars, this is a nice place to stop this series and kind of retool for the long haul or for another run. This particular iteration of Ghost Rider is not going away. He's actually coming back in one of the Secret Wars issues, a series. But with regards to this storyline, you know, this is a quick and not the, you know, not the cleanest wrap up of the story, but it still ends with the promise of more issues with Robbie Reyes. He makes a promise to the spirit. It's not an avenging spirit per se, but he's pretty much creating a premise for this Ghost Rider that's different than the Ghost Riders that we've seen in the past, be it Danny Ketch or Johnny Blaze. And the premise is actually a little bit more 90s grim and gritty than even the Danny Ketch Ghost Rider was. I'm kind of interested to see if this will last or how long it will last going forward. And, you know, whenever we see this Ghost Rider, this version of Ghost Rider pop up again in either a miniseries or a long-form story, I'm kind of interested to see where the premise of, or at least the reason for the Ghost Rider's being and not necessarily being a spirit of vengeance, but being an engine or a spirit of something a little bit more dark or a little bit more it's less superhero-y. I mean, there's not much I can say without really spoiling how they're setting up future stories. But it's kind of an interesting take, and like I said, it's different from any of the other Ghost Riders that we've seen so far. So, oh, here's my note. I said it sounds very Marvel Knights, and I know that's a very dated reference at this point, but it does sound very Marvel Knights.
I have no
rapid fire.
I got through all mine.
Let's see. Any more rapid fire that I got to this week?
I will say I have one regret for this week.
Shoot.
With books. And that is one of my past Click of the Weeks had a new issue this week, and I really wanted to get around to reading it, but there was so much good stuff. I was just not able to get to it before we got to recording, and that is Future Proof number 4. The last issue had that whole Babe Ruth conspiracy.
Okay.
That was
right.
It was so well done, it made me Wikipedia Babe Ruth, which that was never going to happen. We got a new issue this week, and it's sitting. I've got the copy sitting right here next to my computer to get to. And if there was, you know, 15, 20 more minutes before the show started, I would have had a chance to read it. But
right. You know what I didn't get to was Dave number 2.
Yeah, I was gonna say that just reminded me I didn't get to Dave either.
You know, I took it off my because I had it on my list. You know, to prep to you know, to I was planning on reading it. And I ended up getting I made it to the shop this week early because I won't be able to go tomorrow. But what they pulled for me was the subscription cover.
Mm.
It's pretty funny. I haven't had a chance to read it. I'm looking forward to reading this. The first issue was good. I hope the second issue continues that level of quality. Oh, and Dirt, you didn't get to read Walking Dead?
Oh, I did read Walking Dead.
Oh, did I bring up something?
Sorry for reminding me.
Sore point.
Sorry. I mean, this was supposed to be a big issue because Michonne returns.
Okay.
You find out
she was gone, but okay.
If you see here on the cover, they're at the beach, at the wharf. She's been out on a fishing boat.
Okay.
And they've been, you know, new source of food, not a lot of zombies to worry about on the high seas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's again another issue where you've got 5 pages in a row of people just sitting and staring at the sunset and talking about fishing and talking about life and talking about not zombies. There was like 2 pages at the beginning where they chopped a couple zombies while they were standing on the shore waiting for the boat to arrive, and that was it. You know, otherwise the rest of it is just a lot of talking and what am I going to do now? And it's a new future and we're rebuilding our lives. And, you know, it's all set up for something to come along and, you know, boo-boo all over everything they have. But I'm just so tired of this. Like, this was, you know, it used to be as I was unpacking the boxes on Tuesday, this would be the first book I would grab and read
right.
And, you know, immediately go through. And I got to it eventually. Sometime on Tuesday night, but it was not the first thing I read, and just so disappointing.
Wow. You really need to go up to Kirkman at a con and be like, hey, man, what's going on with this?
I'll just slap him across the face and walk away.
All right, rapid fire from me, the last book I read this week. On my way home today, you know, after being trapped in the office for ungodly hours today, was something I thought I would be hate reading. Amazing X-Men number 18, right? The last issue. Oh, no, not the last issue. I apologize. Not the last issue of this whole Juggernaut business, right? Who's the next Juggernaut, blah, 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 blah. This issue, do not adjust your computers, your tablets, your iPods, your phones, however it is that you're listening or watching this, do not adjust your ears. I actually enjoyed this. This is a real candidate for Click of the Week for me.
What?
Not joking. Because it is so cleverly written. There's some great banter in this, some great wit that Chris Yost puts in this, that I was taken aback, shocked, genuinely shocked at how much I enjoyed reading this. And you know, you guys know, I've been ready to burn this book at the stake every time that it comes out. And I was pleasantly surprised that, you know, as I was sort of intending to hate read it and ended up enjoying the read. And it's funny that this, of all issues, happened to be, you know, very, very close to being a Click of the Week for me. It's a definite candidate. I'm still mulling over my choices. Hmm. Yeah, I wish Roddy Cat was here and he'd be like, are you serious?
I was going to say, wasn't one of y'all enjoying Amazing?
No. Well, I mean, I think Roddy was, but I know I was definitely on the, burn them at the stake bandwagon.
Well, I know a lot of people were like 6 issues ago, maybe, but not in the last couple months.
Oh, you mean post-Wendigo? Like, the Wendigo stuff was really rough. But this Juggernaut, I mean, listen, this Juggernaut stuff was pretty rough, too, to be perfectly honest. I think this issue, you know, this issue is like a shining star amongst all those, you know, in all seriousness.
I'm just having a hard time with the artwork.
I look past the artwork, believe it or not. You know, the artwork in this was rough. I'm inclined to agree. But, you know, I focused very much on the story in this, and it was just that well written. And, you know, that says a lot.
All right, anything else before we do our clicks here?
I think so. It is that time.
All right, who's going first?
My click of the week is Jamaldon.
Hold on. Yeah, we do.
Batman and Robin number 40. I was hyping it up as being the last issue from this creative team, and then someone online earlier today was like, you know, there's an annual still to come out. Like, so?
Yeah, but this was
the end.
This was a great issue. Like, I almost picked this one. And I have Roddy Cat's Click of the Week, which is another book that I almost picked, which was Darth Vader number 3 is his Click of the Week.
Nice!
I wanted to pick this one. In fact, when I read this one first, and I thought, wow, that's going to be tough to beat. But then I read Deathlok, and for me, Deathlok is my Click of the Week. It's if Darth Vader's an 85, Deathlok is a 90 out of 100. Like, it just barely inches right above it. But for me, it just hit all those beats.
Cool. I'm going to opt with... Actually, you know what? I forgot to mention something about Daredevil number 14 very, very quickly. Super rapid fire. This is a development in the Daredevil story that I guess we could have all seen coming, but it still took me aback. I won't spoil too much. You should read this if you want to see something that you never thought you would see in a Daredevil book. I'll leave it at that. Not quite Click of the Week material for me. Believe it or not, what I really enjoyed this week, I'm torn. I'm definitely on board with Darth Vader number 3, but I think I'm going to go with Guardians 3000 number 6. I had a blast reading this book front to back, and can't deny that there's Abnett sticks in so many great, you know, one-liners and in-jokes and references and brings so many of these characters together. Like I said, I won't spoil it, the entire plot, but let's just say the way I summarized it in my notes was every Guardian there is, was, and ever will be. And I'll leave it at that. Yes, I'm invoking Bret Hart in this.
Whoa. But,
right? You know, and that sort of leads you to what this issue was like. You know, and if anyone's even vaguely familiar with Guardians 3000 and the the future team of Guardians, you can kind of guess what happens in this issue if I'm describing it that way. So I enjoyed this book a lot. Lots of fun to read. I'm going to be very disappointed when this goes in the wake of Secret Wars. I really hope that it comes back. Some form of this comes back because the Guardians of the Galaxy of the future really do need more run, you know, in the Marvel U right now, in my opinion.
All right, Tim, take us home.
I want to thank everyone for watching tonight's episode of the Comic Book Chronicles. Or if you're listening to the audio podcast, remember to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98, at CBCron, and at ThePlagueNation.
Oh, you've got all of those Twitter accounts on your banner.
Well, I've removed ThePlagueNation for now.
I see. Website.
Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70. And Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt. And popculturenetwork.com.
Yay.
Yeah, Dirt.
Yay. We'll be back next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, to give you more of the comic book goodness you've come to enjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey!